The 843 acres of Central Park are a welcome respite from the concrete and glass of Manhattan streets for New Yorkers and visitors who want to stop and smell the roses for a bit. And as my next guest discovered when a job layoff gave him time to look around, that's as true for those sporting wings as for those walking around on two legs. Bob Levy has written a book based on his journal from that year spent getting to know the birds of Central Park in general and one particular red-winged blackbird named George. The book is just out from Thomas Dunn Books. It's called Club George, The Diary of a Central Park Birdwatcher, and Bob Levy joins me now. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
So let's just start by telling us, by having you tell us who George is and how you met him.
George is, as you said, a red-winged blackbird. They're migratory birds. A few overwinter in Central Park, actually, but most go south. I met George quite by accident. I was in a favorite spot of mine for years in Central Park. I was not a birder at the time.
What spot?
I refused to say on grounds that it might tend to incriminate the bird. Throughout the book, I do not give the exact locations because I didn't want to encourage hordes of people to visit these particular spots.
You hope your book is that popular.
Yes. But
well, what time of year was it?
It was when I met George. I can tell you it was Sunday, June 2nd, 2002, at about 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. I can't be more precise than that.
And what was George doing?
Well, I was speaking to a new acquaintance of mine. And he was explaining to me it's a particular pond that is full of turtles. And it's predominantly full of people's discarded pets. They're red-eared Mississippi sliders, they're called. And he was pointing them out. There was several dozen. And
turtles?
Yes. And this small black burr had landed on a fence beside us, about 2 feet over our head and 2 feet in front of us. And the bird started calling and started singing. And we were talking, but the bird was so loud. I later found out that red-winged blackbirds can sing at a volume of 90 decibels, which is equivalent to, let's say, a jackhammer. He was so loud and overpowering that we were trying to talk to each other. We began shouting over one another. And I finally, in exasperation, I said, "What is it with this bird?" And my friend said, "Oh, that's George." And I said, "What do you mean that's George?" I said, "That's a wild bird, and you mean to tell me you know this bird, and his name is George?" He said, "Watch this." And he had a roll. He took out the roll, and he broke off a little piece. He raised his arm way up to the top of the fence. The bird immediately ceased calling, ran along the top of the fence, snatched the bird out of his fingers, and the bird fled to a small island about 50 feet away and ate the food. And that's how I met George.
And you can tell one red-winged blackbird from another?
Generally not. But this particular bird had two things going for him that made it really easy. First of all, red-winged blackbirds in the breeding season are highly territorial. So you can be sure if you find a male in one spot during the breeding season, which is March, let's say, through July, it'll be the same male, except if other males come to challenge him. The other thing was a distinguishing characteristic was his personality, which was quite unique. And the other was the fact that he had a droopy wing. One of his wings hung lower than the other. So that was a good identifier for me to know that this was, in fact, the same bird.
Bob Levy is my guest on WNYC. His book is called Club George, The Diary of a Central Park Birdwatcher. And we can take your calls. Do you have any adventures in urban birdwatching to relate? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Now, I'd always realized Central Park was a good place for people to go birdwatching in the big city, but I hadn't realized until I read your book that it's such a magnet for birds. You call it a migrant trap.
Right.
Which means?
Which means that birds on the flyway, let's say at this time of year, the birds are coming back north from south, as far south as South America in some instances.
Are we in the season yet?
Yes, it has started. So this is the spring migration. And many birds will stop over here for a while, just to feed, to rest, on their way to breeding grounds up further north. Some others come here and actually breed. And George, his breed, is one that will come into this area and breed.
And I think you say something in the book like, Central Park is one of the few places on the Mid-Atlantic seaboard for birds to find a tree.
I didn't exaggerate it that way, but I think I'd describe it as a lifeboat in a sea of concrete and steel.
Right, I see. So around this particular
the immediate area surrounding the park is inhospitable to animals, period.
Ah, so being inhospitable. Oh, right. The immediate, right. Of course, the concrete jungle.
The concrete jungle right outside.
Yes. And so is there something about Central Park that it would attract more birds or more kinds of birds during the migration season than, Forest Park in Queens, Inwood Hill Park uptown, any of these?
A lot of the parks do have birds. Prospect Park, I think, has more species.
Really?
Yes, than Central Park. And they throughout the year.
And the Central Park Conservancy says over 275 species of birds have been spotted in the park. How many do you think you've seen?
Oh, I would say maybe 100. Maybe 100.
You think that 275 is a little bit of an exaggeration?
I think, for a couple of reasons. I would put the number closer to 200, 225. And many of those don't even stop here. They include birds that fly over. So at certain times of year, great hordes of, let's say, hawks, red-tailed hawks might be seen, 1,000 birds at a time flying over. But they don't stop here.
Chris in Inwood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hey. It's my first time calling. I've been listening for a long, long, long time.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So what do you want to say about birds?
Well, I wanted to say that I've been going up into Inwood Park at night and going owl watching. And I've spotted, I'm pretty sure, eastern screech owls. I think they're juveniles. I'm new to the bird watching scene, but according to my bird guide and my CD of bird calls, that's what they are.
Nighttime bird watching in a Manhattan park. There's an adventurous soul.
I do it myself.
Do you?
Yeah.
We've been going up with flashlights just after sunset. We've been going on cold nights when we think it'll be safe because no one would be out there trying to rob people on a freezing night.
There you go. And there are owls. There are owls?
There are owls in Central Park. There are eastern screech owls. Very few, but they're there, and they do breed.
How do you get started? What's the first stop or step for someone interested in birding in Central Park or anywhere else in the city? Because, we've done a couple of bird segments over the years, and I'll bet a lot of people think, well, this is great. This would be a great way to take a little break from urban life, and I like to get out in my park. But how do I do it?
Well,
you don't just go out and look, right?
That actually is how you start. You just go out and look. You have to keep an open mind. You have to look. And most important, what a lot of people don't understand is you have to listen. I was a park goer for many years before I was a bird watcher, and I walked around with what we're wearing right now, headphones, because I'm a great music fan. But you miss an awful lot. Many birders hear the bird before they see it, so audio clues are very, very important. That's one thing that you have to remember if you want to become a bird watcher. And the other is just to be open to anything.
Now let's take Susan in Manhattan and see if she's serious. Susan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Okay, my son, for his science project, he's in third grade. Well, actually, both of us have this project now of watching pigeons and marking down the types of pigeons. And we've gotten some help from Cornell University, who sends you a little packet of marking down the different types of pigeons. There are checkers and spades and piades and blue bars and red bars, and we didn't know any of this. But now we want to graduate a bit from pigeons, and I wanted to know if the gentleman could tell us where actually could we start in Central Park, where you think would be the most successful place with the least amount of waiting when you're dealing with a little boy who wants to have some,
instant gratification.
Right.
All right. Now, first of all, Bob, do pigeons count?
Yes, they do.
Absolutely. I have to touch on
that. Absolutely.
And there are that many different kinds of pigeons. Who knew?
I didn't. That was news to me. I'm just familiar with the basic species which we have here. It's called the rock pigeon.
So what's the next step for a kid?
I would say take them to the Ramble in Central Park is a wonderful, wonderful place to see birds, especially at this time of year.
The Ramble, okay.
The Ramble.
All right.
Also, anywhere, the Ramble does border on the lake, and anywhere around the periphery of the lake, you're going to find, you will find cardinals right now, male and female cardinals are courting. If you're lucky, you'll be able to see the male feeding the female. They do that very, very often right now. And, of course, the red-winged blackbirds are back, and the males are yelling and screaming at each other and starting to fight. They just started about a week ago.
Hmm. Susan, thank you for your call. Bob Levy, my guest on WNYC for another few minutes. His new book, Club George, The Diary of a Central Park Bird Watcher. And it seems like the stream of consciousness, personal journal style that you wrote your book in, comes in sharp contrast to the organization of, say, your average bird field guide. Why did you choose this style for your book?
Okay. That was an important concept in this. I didn't think the world was waiting breathlessly for another field guide. And I worked really hard at using my own voice. I try to write the book as I speak. And I wanted it to be a personal journey, a memoir. It is not a field guide. It is not a scientific book, even though there's a lot of scientific information I get and terrific cooperation I got from an ornithologist, Ken Yasukawa, who helped me with a lot of the science. But that was not totally my intention. I wanted to write an entertaining book, and I wanted to make it fun. I wanted to show people that birding is just not making lists of birds that you see. It's having an experience.
You talked about the male red-winged blackbird yelling at each other. Is that what
yes.
you said?
Yes.
Are there people who bird by sound as well as sight?
Yes. Yes. And in fact, quite unconsciously, I have gained a facility to recognize many bird calls. Now, without even trying, now I can walk through the Ramble, let's say, and I'll hear sounds and I'll know what the bird is, and I can find it that way. It's another way to find birds.
Do you do any?
Do I do bird calls?
Yeah.
I can do a pretty good cardinal.
Let's hear it. Pretty good. But you can't do that.
No
right.
way.
Very distinctive.
Red-winged blackbird, I don't think the human voice can do it.
Are there birding controversies?
There are. Many.
Such as?
Well, as in any human endeavor, you find politics. Many people think that because they're birders and they're appreciating nature and it's art, it's beautiful.
Birding politics?
Sure.
Like what?
Well, should you feed a bird? Shouldn't you feed a bird? Should you go looking at owls? People get very upset. You have to leave the owls alone. And somebody mentioned... caller said flashlight. People would react in horror if they heard that
really?
You were using a flashlight to find an owl.
Because it's so...
Because you could
what?
Frighten the owl.
Because you could frighten the owl.
Yes.
This bird you had the relationship with, George, did you feed George?
Yes, he did.
You did?
Yes.
So some people wouldn't like that.
That's right.
Did it make George dependent?
No. And that is, in my opinion, and I can back this up, I think, that's an old theory that's been discredited. If you go online to the National Audubon Society, for example, they have information about that, saying that that's simply not so. That birds do not really become dependent on humans supplementing their diet. The only difference is during winter, their longevity is increased by people with backyard feeders. That helps certain species to a small degree.
Mm-hmm.
But birds really don't become dependent on humans to feed them.
Mary in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Yes, hi. I have another pigeon story.
Oh, my.
I teach art on the fifth floor.
I thought we were going to go much more exotic than this today, but what the heck?
It's going to end up exotic. I'm an art teacher on the fifth floor of a school on Fifth Avenue, 91st Street, and I had a third grader run into my room saying there's a red-tailed hawk eating a pigeon.
Oh, it's really a red-tailed hawk story.
Yes, exactly. And we run out there, and 2 feet away from us through the window is this magnificent bird on the roof devouring a pigeon. And it was a magical experience for all of us. We got to see this incredible bird so close, though, you know, eating a pigeon, which was rather grisly. But it had it just transformed all of us that day. We had never really seen a bird that close. And it just flew over from Central Park, landed there, ate the bird, and left. So that's my red-tailed hawk story.
I've had the same experience. You should see him chow down on a squirrel. It's horrible.
Mary, thank you very much. And it might freak out the previous caller's 8-year-old. I don't know. But here's an email that just came in. Tell me if you think this is credible. It says, Brian, I just saw a turkey in a tree in Central Park this morning just south of the amphitheater. It had been treed by dogs.
How about that? That's funny you say that because this Sunday afternoon, I heard a rumor that there was a peacock in the park, and somebody told me to go to a spot. And this was on the lake, on the northwest corner of the lake. It was not a peacock. It was a wild turkey.
Huh.
And I watched the turkey with a couple of photographers for about a half hour. And then at sunset, the turkey flew up and roosted in a tree, and we saw it there. Obviously, it spent the evening. So there is, I believe it's a female wild turkey running around the park, and that's pretty rare.
Pretty rare. The peacocks are loud, aren't they?
They are.
Besides the Channel 4 news van.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been one in the park. That would be a stretch.
Let's see if we can get one more owl story in here. Allison in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Friends of mine bought a house last year on 25th Street between 7th and 8th.
Chelsea.
And they have a big mouse problem in their house.
Uh-huh.
But they discovered, looking out their window, an owl was waiting for the mice. You know, they keep the garbage in front. It's an old brownstone kind of like building, so they keep the garbage in the little area in the front. And the owl would just swoop down, capture a mouse, fly back up into the tree, which the branch was right outside their window. And I've been dying to go over there and watch it at night, but it's the kids' bedroom.
So it doesn't solve the problem, but it provides some entertainment.
Yeah.
All right, and one more. Joan, on the Upper West Side. Real quick, Joan.
Yes, it's maybe not a good idea to feed birds because it has created a problem, terrible problem with Canadian geese.
Does that come from, we're almost out of time, but does that come from feeding, do you think, Bob? I know there are more Canadian geese around.
I really don't know.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to leave it with Bob Levy, whose wonderful new book is called Club George, The Diary of a Central Park Birdwatcher, published by?
By St. Martin's Press.
And thanks a lot for coming in. Keep on watching.
Thank you very much.
Nilla McGovern produced this program with Ilya Meritz, Jim Colgan, and Priya George. We had help today from Cara Woodward and Alan Smith. That's Debbie Daughtry at the audio controls. Music provided by Soul Live. I'm Brian Lehrer.